Hello and welcome to We're Watching What? I'm your host Dana, or the DHK as I've known, and this is our last roundtable of 2023, and we watched three things for it. We watched Rebel Moon, Part 1, A Child of Fire from Zack Snyder. We also watched Maestro, which is the Leonard Bernstein biopic. And then finally, we watched the first three episodes of Percy Jackson and the Olympians, which is the new Disney Plus series. A major spoiler alert for all of those things. And then, because it's not as obvious from the title, just a mild spoiler alert for one plot line in the new Wonka film. That comes up in the We're Watching What section. And we do end up going into a fair amount of details of the Gilded Age season 2, so a spoiler alert for that. And now, without further ado, here's We're Watching What? We watched Rebel Moon, Part 1, A Child of Fire, and my first question is, Jackie, how far did you make it into this movie?
Well, the thing is, I fell asleep, and so I'm not sure exactly when I fell asleep, but I don't know, halfway, something.
Oh, that's further than I expected. Matt, I'm assuming you finished this film?
I did. I actually loved it.
I can't tell if you're serious because your video
No, I really loved it, yeah.
Oh,
I have critiques, but I loved it.
Okay.
I'm very surprised. I'm very pleased.
Okay.
Very surprised. Very, very happy. It feels like a, not quite there, but a like kind of return of the Zack Snyder that I used to love a little bit more. Like it feels like it's not Watchmen or 300, but it's like, it's a far, to me, a far step forward from pretty much everything he touched with DC.
Okay.
His DC movies are so bad.
Yeah, I was like, that's a low.
No, it is, but I said it was a relief because I was like, if you would have asked me in like 2013, he was one of my favorite filmmakers.
Okay.
And I would tell you that with a straight face. Like, and it was not a popular opinion, but I love this guy's movies. I love Legends of the Guardians. I love that movie. I love Watchmen. I love 300. I even like Sucker Punch. I was like his Dawn of the Dead. I don't like zombie movies very much, but I love it. I love him. And so anyway, it was a little RIP when Man of Steel came out. And I was like, ooh, because I was excited about it because of him. And I was like, woof.
Uh-huh.
So this felt like a return to him doing something that he's at least passionate about. And I could feel that in it. And I liked that. Whereas I don't think he felt very passionate about, maybe he did, but about the DC stuff. It didn't feel that way. And seeing him at Comic-Con talking about Superman was so like dry.
It was so like, weird. It's a paycheck. I almost feel like he... Maybe there was just so much pressure around this Superman movies too, you know.
Sure.
There was just, especially because everyone loved 300 and everyone, you know what I mean. And he was, I know Watchmen wasn't quite as popular, but it did well enough, right? I mean, I feel like it put him,
it made
at least somewhat, you know, out there. So
it had it. Watchmen wasn't the most popular thing in the world, but it had its audience. Like, I'm not the only person who's obsessed with it. Right? Like,
no,
it
had,
it still had its audience. I know his Justice League, like, director's cut has its audience. It's not me unless I'm extremely intoxicated. But I don't think that anything he did in DC reached a level of, like, cult classic or something with certain people as anything he did before it. You know what I mean? Even Sucker Punch has its audience because the idea is cool. And getting back to Rebel Moon, that's what I loved about it. It wasn't terribly original. It was derivative of a lot of things, but I really liked that it was a new story. It was like a new thing that's not based on something, and it's not. And I want more. Actually, I want to know more about the lore and the backstory that leads to where we are now. Like, I want that. So I was like, that was successful for me. It worked, and I thought it was beautiful.
I was not expecting that answer. Yeah.
I think he's always made really aesthetic films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, he's good at that. Like, I will definitely say that. I mean, the problem is like, I wasn't hating it when I fell asleep, but, you know, I mean, falling asleep is falling asleep, right? And I don't know. The dialogue in the beginning was rough. And
in the middle and the end. For me.
Like, you can tell that, like, at least the main girl, she was trying really hard. You know, she was doing her best.
See, I loved her in this. I was so happy to see Sophia in the leading role finally. And I was like,
I
loved her.
Really gave everything.
I think, I don't know. I just found it so derivative and so, like, paint by numbers of, like, hey, we're getting the gang together. Here's all these people who fit into these, like, very generic tropes. We don't trust you to have, like, any more depth to them, you know. The whole, like, basically like an indigenous person connecting with animals and the black guy in the Colosseum. And, you know, it just, it was tough for me. But I think this would have been a much better series. That's what I actually think. Like, if it had given enough time to, like, actually introduce these characters before versus, like, shoehorning them in with stereotypes, I may have been more amenable to it.
No, I thought that same thing. Like, I saw the stereotype, all that stuff, and I was, like, kind of, like, there were eye roll things about all of that. But I ended up liking all the different the scenes. But I was, like, God, this is so episodic, right? Like, it was very, like, okay, now we're going to go to this planet. And we're going to meet this person, and then we're going to have an action sequence that's going to display their abilities, and then we're going to go to the next planet, and then we're going to meet this person. I thought this is a episodic, like eight episode, you know, one planet per, you know, and but what that told me is, so I agree that I thought that really could have worked that way even better, but what it told me is I wanted more, like I was ready to watch more, like, you know, of that all being fleshed out better,
sure,
you know, but yeah, yeah, it worked for me, and I was I liked Sophia. I think the weakest part of it for me was honestly Charlie Hunnam. He usually is the weakest part for me.
Yeah.
I was disappointed by his, when we talk about dialogue, I felt like some of the weakest dialogue for me was coming out of his mouth. Like, it was very, like, stuff where there were moments that I felt were, like, we're trying to go with this kind of Han Solo-esque, like, you know, scruffy, good-looking, like, funny out of touch guy, and he just never delivered anything funny, but he was like trying to be funny and it just wasn't working for me, and I was like, oh, this would have been better if this was somebody else.
Agreed on that one.
Generally liked the cast across the board. Otherwise, I'd seen the trailer one time and I kind of went into it not really remembering what everything was going to be, and I was like, I didn't know Anthony Hopkins was in it, I didn't know my wife Duna Bay was in it, and I loved her. Of course I have an obsession with her, but I thought she was I thought she was so cool.
When Anthony Hopkins's voice came on, I was just like, does he owe money? Is he paying off a vacation home?
See, no, he wasn't like, trying very hard in that opening monologue.
No, he really wasn't.
He was just like, I'm going to exposition at you. I'm a robot with a crown now.
But I liked the scene with that girl on that planet and like talking about the princess and stuff. I thought he was better there. But in that opening, I was like, this is Anthony Hopkins just reading from a piece of paper.
he came in and he did one day of VO, and that was it.
He came in for like 15 minutes and was like, I'll try this the one way, and then that's what you get.
At least he's returning for the sequel.
Yeah, that's true.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. And we're back. I mean, get that bank, you know, make that money, Anthony.
Seriously.
Anthony.
But on that note too, like I had said before, but like it was, I thought it was beautiful, but I thought like, for something so special effects heavy, I thought generally it felt pretty expensive, which I know we talk a lot about how I think a lot of Netflix films, we don't think they look very expensive. This kind of made me bummed that it is Netflix, because I was like, if you're interested in watching this, this is a theatrical movie. This is not like meant to be, the spectacle of it all, I guess, is like it's for a theater. And so it's like, it just makes me sad about Netflix existing. But... all that being said, it felt to me like it had a budget, which I appreciated, because Justice League did not feel that way.
I mean, it did, but it still didn't live up to, I guess, what I would expect from a film that has already been, you know, basically greenlit for part one and two. But
I mean, it looked better. To me, I thought it looked better than anything I'm really seeing from Marvel lately or DC, honestly. Like, I thought the effects looked better than most of that stuff. But...
I think it was like on par. Also, I am just realizing, I was like, who is the guy who plays her like dumb farmer friend? And what I'm realizing is that this film has both the Dario Naharises from Game of Thrones. I didn't know that. Because I was like, what is this guy in?
Michael, I think is how you say his name, but it's pronounced weird. But he, I mean, it's spelt weird, but he's in Haunting of Hill House also, and I love him in that.
Yeah, because I was like, who is this guy? I don't know who he is, but he obviously got a lot of FaceTime. And then I just looked at his thing and I was like, oh my God, he's Dario Naharis. But so is Ed Skrein.
Ed Skrein,
I will give credit to Ed Skrein. Like, I don't know what he's like as a real person, but he was born to play, like, Nazi-looking villain. Like, that's
I was thinking the same time. I was like, oh, it was a little trite for me. Like, the, you know, the guy coming in town... you know, and is nice and mean, but you know, I love that. There's nothing I love more than that villain a lot of the time. So
yeah,
I was eating it up, even though I was kind of like, okay, we're establishing the stormtroopers, you know,
which so, oh my God, I couldn't get over it. It was a painful watch for me personally. And I also watched it on the tail end of like two equally painful movies. So I was just like, I'm done, which probably hurt the movie more.
You're like, I'm done with movies.
I'm done with like films forever.
Yeah, movies.
I've retired.
Yes, I've decided no.
Yeah. No, no mas.
Unless
no
you guys can do better.
You effort, you know?
I'm not coming back.
Well, and then they immediately announced part two, and I went, oh boy, okay, all right. I guess good news, you only have to wait 4 months.
Yeah, only till April, and I will be seeing that one in its limited theatrical run, for sure.
More power to you.
Yeah, I will be there.
I am surprised. I'm happy for you. Yeah,
no, and I'm not offended people don't like it. I feel like it's probably very polarizing for a lot of people, but it felt, I enjoyed it. I was immersed into it. I don't know, I just thought it was so fun. But yeah, I do acknowledge, I think there are things that can definitely be improved. And it's not, like I said, it's not the full quality of what I would have been expecting personally in the early 2010s, you know?
Yeah.
From him, or like the late 2010s. No, yeah, early 2010s, late 2000s. But, you know, I'm hoping it spawns, if it does well enough, or anyone takes to it, and then see how part two goes. I would love if it spawned like comic books or like, supplemental novels, like kind of like Star Wars does, like, because I would eat that up. I would get into it.
Okay.
Get more of the lore. I love a good lore.
Yeah. I mean, I do too, but this lore did not quite speak to me. Although I did want to know, the one thing I wanted to know is what was up with like the robots and the programming and like the Anthony Hopkins Flower Crown Rebel stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but I guess.
Yeah, I wanted to know more about that. He used to be a soldier, I guess, right? And then. He's kind of,
yeah, they all were, and then
a wanderer. Now he's got the crown, the horns. Like, I'm like, what's going on? But that stuff. But I thought some of the tech was cool. Like, I thought the robot things that like crawl around and then imprison you, like, or like, you know, they like turn, they get your body up there when they shoot the needles in the back of the
head. Yeah.
Like, I thought those were like really cool. Like, there were things that was like, okay, design wise, and I liked. Even on the Anthony Hopkins robot, there were like parts of the metal on him had like floral decoration on it and stuff. And I was very interested in like just the whole kind of like art direction of it all. And I was like, God, you could, it wasn't going into it in the film, but there were enough details on the different planets and things that I was watching and catching onto that I was like, there's story.
You know what this, you know what those are kind of, you know, the way that you're talking about it, it reminds me of Pitch Black 2. What was that called? I don't even remember now.
Oh yeah, Chronicles of Riddick. It felt like that.
Chronicles of Riddick, because I loved that movie. I love Chronicles of Riddick, but it's also one of those ones where I'm like, God, I want the fucking book. Like, where's the book? Because it had so many, like, clearly, I don't know, maybe it's just because we're used to Star Wars or something, but it felt like there was enough like little things that the art direction or the art people were doing that gave clues to a deeper storyline that we weren't aware of, right?
Yeah,
or like
there's story,
or like history, or like a, there's something there, right?
Yeah.
And so that's interesting. So it does kind of make me want to watch it more. I really didn't mean to fall asleep. So, I mean,
yeah,
it is.
But I mean, had it entertained you? I mean, because yeah, you pass out, but you would have turned it on after the next day when you woke up, right? But it's just like,
yeah,
not that interesting, you know. It's like, but yeah, and I liked the music in it too a lot, and I have to give him, you know, kudos for shooting it, because he also shot it, which I thought was pretty cool, and he's the DP, and I thought the cinematography was very in line with what his signature kind of stuff is, and the slow,
yeah, honestly, and think stuff. But and he gets good. He's a good director too, and because I was gonna say that, man, maybe he should just do art direction, because his stuff is so beautiful. Mm. Like, he just does a great job at that part of it. But I will say that I do think he gets good performances when he's passionate about the project.
Yeah.
You know, like, it feels like, I don't know, like I was saying, the main girl, she just felt like she was giving so much more than the movie necessarily warranted. And I don't mean that in a bad way, just in a like, someone was like there coaching her and being like, this is really important and you need to show this much emotion or whatever, yeah. You know?
I think it's partly Sophia too, though, because it's like her role in Kingsman. It's like she even tries a lot there. And I really like
she
her.
Does.
Like
she does. I like but her she, too. But...
it's like a silent assassin role and she's like, you know, doing the most. And then it's like, I liked her in Atomic Blonde with Charlize also. I thought that she was good there too. But yeah, it was nice to see her get a chance or shot at like a leading role, which is kind of cool because she's always there on like as a supplemental, you know, supporting cast. So I liked seeing her. I liked her in it, but I'm not sure that it's like, oh, I think this is going to be the launch of something where she's going to be going into like Academy Award consideration roles, you know, but I, you know.
No, she did well though, I thought. Yeah. But I also think that speaks to the direction. Like, I think that he does a decent job at that too.
Yeah. Yeah, and Spider Lady, sorry, reminded me of Saga, and that was a hard scene for me to watch. I was like,
ooh, I don't think I got that far.
Oh, okay. That was, I guess, maybe like an hour in, probably. So you didn't even meet Duna Bay. Oh, girl.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Things to look forward to.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That in part
well,
two.
Well, now I am a little more excited to at least watch it now. So that is something positive.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll make it all the way through. We can't make any guarantees, but I am now at least more interested in restarting it than I was previously.
Fair. Very fair.
And Dana's going to go rewatch it right after this.
Absolutely not.
Dana's rewatching it every week
as we
for the
speak.
Next
yep. Until
quarter,
part two
least.
Comes out. Yeah.
It's her new obsession. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. On a loop. On a loop.
Yep. There you go.
Well, we also watched another Netflix film, and that is Maestro. Jackie, I'm going to guess you didn't fall asleep in this one, but where do you stand on it?
It wasn't my favorite.
Okay, that's fair.
If we're just going to give, like, blunt things. I thought that it was trying really hard to be important and very pretentious.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that, like, I don't like Bradley Cooper. So that is part of it, right? Like, I think he's scummy and he always seems scummy to me. And there's no, like, whatever. I think he always seems like himself and everything. So I know he was trying to disappear into this role or whatever. But, like, meh. You know, I think Carey Mulligan is amazing. And I will watch her do a soliloquy in basically anything. So... she saved a lot of it for me in ways, but like, I just thought that it was very pretentious.
Matt?
Yeah, I liked it well enough. It's not something I'm ever really running out to rewatch. I thought it felt kind of, it's funny coming out of a glowing review of the last one, and I'm saying this felt like style over substance, which you could say about Rebel Moon for sure. But
yeah.
It felt very, it was very artistic. Like, I really liked the first act or so, I guess. I was interested in it. And I got to say, it was odd because I was like, okay, I'm here for what you're doing, like what you're channeling here and what you're trying to evoke, like the feel. And then the second we got to color, I wanted it all black and white.
I really liked the black, because for the black and white for me, it felt like they were trying to make like a rom-com from the 30s, which I love a rom-com from the 30s because that was very like steady. You know what I mean? Like the shots were very, you know, I don't know.
Locked down?
Stationary?
Yeah, they were locked down.
Camcorder was very like, it was very like old school 30s where like the camera was there, but like it wasn't like art direction was like, you know what I mean? Like they didn't take as many risks as they do now. And there was obviously some modern camera work in there too, but a lot of it felt like full takes. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And so I like, love
let the full scene play out.
I just feel like they let it the moments breathe in a nice way in the black and white, you know?
Yeah. I felt like the cinematography and everything to me kind of stayed very consistent throughout. And like, you know, they didn't cut as much back then, right? So it's like, I felt like it was a lot of long takes and not as many big cuts. And I thought that was pretty consistent throughout. But I just thought that it just looked gorgeous in the black and white. It just it like lended itself to that in a way that and the makeup and all the things, it was like less kind of egregious. You know, like in the color, there were some times like when, especially when he was older and interviewing and stuff, where I was kind of like, this isn't bad makeup, but I also like not believing it. Like when he's older.
I mean, the thing is like it was very well done makeup. The problem is the makeup can't move like skin does, no matter how much, you know, you want it to be able to. And we know him and we've seen him in other things. So it just feels awkward when we get to his face not moving all of a sudden.
I think the other, the big challenge for me, and, you know, I tried to go in objectively, but it just, the second I saw it, you know, the whole thing about him exaggerating features to, you know, that are historically Jewish or, you know, predominantly Jewish, I was like, this didn't make that much of a difference visually. Like Bradley Cooper, I still see Bradley Cooper in it. You know, maybe when he's like slightly older, I was like, okay, whatever. But they touted so much of him like spending time on the prosthetics and blah, blah. I was like, this feels just, you know, like a caricature. And yeah, he kind of looks like Leonard Bernstein, but it doesn't look enough like him for me to be like, I understand like why you did this. Like when Gary Oldman did Darkest Hour, I'm like, okay, fine. I don't see Gary Oldman in there. But here I'm like, you're just a bigger nose and bigger ears. Like, fuck you.
Well, and it's really also, and it's also like, you know, like you said, but, and sure, Leonard had a large, decently large nose, but so does Bradley Cooper naturally.
Yeah.
So it's like, why did you do, you didn't have to do anything. You could have just done makeup to like sell it better. But also when you are, I like Bradley Cooper fine. I don't have issues with him. But when you are that level of an actor who is like able to like totally immerse and like really make me believe that you're that person, the makeup actually doesn't end up being all that necessary. Like the prosthetics and stuff, like to look just like them. Like, what was it recently? I can't even remember. There was something kind of recently where like they didn't even bother with prosthetics or anything, but I still totally just bought it. Like it was an actress and she didn't look like the woman all that much, but it was totally
Whitney Houston. Remember?
I thought Naomi Ackie embodied her just completely physically, but she looked a lot more like my mom. We were watching together and she turned to me and she goes, she looks like Brandy. And I was like, she does look like Brandy. But I believed that her as Whitney. Like that was the one I was thinking of, because it was like they didn't have to do all that, you know, because she was embodying her. To be fair, I'm not really familiar. Like this kind of was my I know the name, I know of them, but I didn't know about the life and bisexuality and all that kind of stuff. But I felt that this, thought it was odd. It was called Maestro when it focused mostly not on the music or the real career of that. It was more.
I mean, it was honestly
part of it, but it was.
I mean, a little bit, you know? But it felt like it was just about those relationships. Like it was little.
Yeah, and so
of their relationship,
it felt kind of like it didn't know exactly what lane it wanted to be in and couldn't do it all. So it just did a little bit of it all.
Like, but I felt like it weirdly, I mean, like obviously it acknowledges the sexuality part of it, but it also was still beating around the bush in a lot of parts, which I found very strange. There are moments I was just like, did you just not want to use the like, you know, modern nomenclature for some of this stuff? Like, did you, like, what was, why didn't you just want to say some of the things? And it was just an odd read to me. And I don't know if it's because the Bernstein family was like so involved in it.
Yeah. That often hurts the film.
You know, yeah.
There's too much involvement. But on that note too, I did feel that a lot of, not just the bisexuality, but other things in the film, there would be conflict or something would come up. And then it felt like we didn't often get resolution or like to get the emotional payoff of a scene where we really work through it. It just felt like it was moments in time throughout. And like when she catches him in the hallway with the young guy, right?
Yeah.
You get the point that like, that's not the first time she knows this is happening and this is a thing that she's known about, you know? And it's like, it goes in, she's not happy with him because it's like, you're doing this here, like, you know, whatever. And also like, you're cheating on me. And then I don't feel like that gets like, there's not like the conversation that is owed after that. I feel like we just didn't get to see it. You know, their conversation where they had their heated argument was, I loved. But I felt, other than that, I didn't feel like anything really carried that much intensity.
Yeah. I just kind of wanted more of a plot, you know, in the sense that like, I just wanted ebbs and flows.
You're so needy.
I know, right?
You're a plot?
God, what?
God, what else can I get you?
What do you want? Like character development?
Jesus Christ.
Like, I mean, the vignettes were like a lovely, you know, acting challenge, but it didn't really feel like a cohesive film in that sense.
Right? Yeah, well, that's what to me it felt like too, the point of style over substance and just like incoherence. It, you know, it was a bunch of vignettes. And some of them made way less sense than others. Like, I understood what they were doing with the Dream Ballet and that it's an ode to the actual pieces that Leonard Bernstein was like the composer for. But at the same time, I was like, is this supposed to be the rehearsal? Is this a Dream Ballet within the film? Like, it didn't communicate super well to me. And then the other one that drove me just absolutely up the wall was the long conducting sequence, because it was just stationary. And I was like, you are doing, like, take advantage of the medium of film right here. You know, like, give us his perspective. Give us, show us the audience, show us whatever. I think what they were trying to do is show it from, like, her view of waiting in the wings. But I also feel like she just, like, is pushed to the side so much that, you know, why would we give this moment to her vision of this?
Well, then, you know what I think may have derailed what maybe could have been original plans in that kind of regard? I think Tar. I think Tar did that so well. Like, love it or hate it, Tar was like an exceptionally made film in a lot of ways, and it, like, those scenes of her conducting and the it's Kate, you know, you can't compete, but it's like, and watching it come out of her is something that, like, I almost feel like he knew he couldn't do that. And I think, like, that was such a big hit last year, like a holiday season Academy Award potential, you know, if not for Michelle Yeoh, you know what I mean? Like, Kate would have walked home with that, you know? And it's like, I felt like it was like, this will be a unique perspective. Let's do it from her point. And then, you know, in that, on that note, it was interesting because even while doing that, I still felt his ego all over the film. And then I thought it was interesting that he gave Carey Mulligan top billing. And so I think she would have to be considered for best actress. I don't think it should be supporting, which she is a supporting role in it to me. So I thought that was interesting. I was like, this is, you're the main character, but you gave her top billing. And I think it's because he wants us to look at that and be like, wow, he's so great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, absolutely.
And I literally think that's why I just like dis. I just don't like him. Like, I really, like, I just, like when he was doing all that press with Lady Gaga, I wanted to die. I wanted to crawl out of my skin. I hated it so much.
I was more embarrassed by her than him in that, but I agree.
I mean, I'm embarrassed.
I could see how he could seem kind of, you know, sleazy or whatever. But I haven't had like a opinion about him much either way. He's just like, oh, whatever. He doesn't hinder something for me usually, but I don't go to things for him.
He just gives me the vibe of like he wants to be taken so seriously.
Yeah,
and in doing so, manages to.
I mean, he's raising his daughter without nannies because he thinks that he should have more, that we shouldn't let other people raise our children.
Okay. Must be nice to have disposable income and also be able to make that choice. And
I'm glad that you have all the time in the world to devote to your daughter when lots of people don't. Yeah. And why are you making people feel bad about needing help? And anyway, sorry. I just dislike.
It's funny, like I see it that way, but then also I see it in the way where I'm like, God, the amount of celebrities who like don't raise their children enough.
Yeah,
sure.
Like, and so I like that. I like
it's
that.
It's funny. It's funny for me because it's like, I think there's something about him that just skeeves me out. So everything he does, I see from this like sketchy standpoint.
Holier than thou. Yeah.
Exactly. And I don't know if that's fair to him. You know what I mean? But
he's fine.
It is what it is. You know.
You can be unfair to him. I think he's fine.
I'm almost like, that's right. He's going to be doing fine.
Okay, yeah.
I really go hated Silver Linings Playlist. I didn't understand the hype. I didn't get it. I have resentful feelings.
I mean, it's ironic because the one thing I do like him in is Wet Hot American Summer, which is so antithetical to like almost everything else he does. It's just, you know, this like absurdist comedy. Yeah.
He's an actor. He exists, you know.
Yeah, but
he's fine.
I do want to see how it plays out in the awards, but I don't think, in spite of all the gimmickiness,
I just feel
of it,
like
that, like
I feel like he's just begging for an Oscar.
Yeah, that's. I don't think he's gonna.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Yeah, and I get it to some degree, but also just like,
gross. All right. Well, moving on to Percy Jackson. and the Olympians, which I was surprised the two of you watched. And I don't know why I was surprised by that. But yeah, how were we? Important question. Did you both read the books?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say all three of us are big fans of those books.
I will say yes, but I have not read them since probably. I think I read the first three like when they came out, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm. I've definitely read them more than once, but it has probably been 10 years since I've read them at this point. Because I got really into the Egyptian Percy. Well, they're not Percy Jackson, but it's the same author.
The red ones.
Yeah, I don't remember.
It's called The Red Pudding. It's good though. I like those.
I did not know he had another series.
Yeah, it's Egypt.
Egypt odds and stuff. And I liked those ones actually better than the Percy Jackson books. So I ended up knowing those better, I think.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it's funny because Greek mythology and ancient Egypt are two of my favorite subjects in the entire world. And like, sixth grade was my favorite for history because that's what we were doing in sixth grade for me. And it was like, so he has odd interests that align in a very specific way that like I'm like, okay, like, and so I've loved.
I mean, I think his odd interest is just mythology. I don't think that's odd.
Not odd, but I guess like for someone to come out and he's done a series on Greek gods, and then now he's doing a series on ancient Egypt, and I was like, it's very specific.
Well, he's also apparently done Norse god ones, which
yes, yeah, he did those too. Yeah, but first two were Egypt.
I haven't read those actually. But I would like
they're good, but yeah.
Because I remember very distinctly loving the Percy Jackson books.
Yeah,
yeah, I definitely enjoyed the first ones. I think I just sort of fell off because they came out when I think I was like graduating. No,
well, and honestly,
graduated college. I'm not sure.
I mean, the two adaptations we've already gotten have been terrible.
Are you counting this one?
No.
The two, the Sea of Monsters and the first one.
Oh, I didn't know there was. I did not even watch the first. Yeah, because Logan, I was just like, this looks terrible. I'm not into it.
I didn't hate the first one. The second one I thought was a mess, but I didn't love the first one, but I thought it was fine.
You know. Okay, so how do we feel about this one?
I have very mixed feelings about it. I think it's. I haven't read. I mean, I've reread the books. I listened to them last, probably a couple years ago. But I remember them pretty well. But I feel like this is, it's well suited for a series.
Yeah.
And I think it. I think the episodes have contained. I think the three it's three so far, right? That we watched. Medusa was the third.
Okay, yes. Yeah. Full disclosure, I've seen episode 4.
okay. But I was going to say 3 is like what's out, I think, right? So, because I'm caught up on it. I just couldn't remember if it was 3 or 4. But I think that each episode structurally has been done how I want it, right? Like, I think it's cut nicely and everything. I get really hung up on, it just feels like not a real, it doesn't feel real to me. And it feels...
like the world doesn't feel real?
Yeah, I don't. There's something about it that feels kind of like B-level attempt at, I don't know. It's weird. And I don't like, unfortunately, the main Percy's acting very much. I think the acting across the board is pretty weak. But
hard. Yeah, I'm enjoying it in the sense that like I'm looking forward to the next episode. And I think that they're doing the story really well. Mm-hmm. And I think that it visually looks very cool. The thing that it's missing is the chemistry between all of the leads, because we're supposed to like, they're supposed to be friends, and these are the first friends he's ever gotten. And I think that like, it's not, they're focused so much on the plot and the action that we're not getting enough of the like
interpersonal
story that I think will be important later, because I think like the Camp Half-Blood, which I was so excited that we finally get to spend like a little bit more time there because the movies and stuff don't have time to. I was hoping that we'd get a little bit more of the like camaraderie, friendship, like, you know, like the Harry Potter feel, right? Like of like the trio and like setting them up and like getting them to that place. And I think maybe it'll come in the next, you know, few episodes or whatever as they kind of coalesce their group. But I just like, I think it's missing that factor where they don't feel connected to each other as much as I feel like we would want them to at this point.
It's feeling hollow to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Like hollow vessel.
Like it's hitting the right marks, but like it's not quite there, you know?
Yeah. And like I feel like it's taken from the Minotaur too. I never, I like, his reaction and everything after that, not that I want him to be mopey for the next forever and be just depressed the rest of the time, but it's just like I felt like it was just kind of like, that is traumatizing. Like, and it just felt kind of like not that big of a deal. Like, everything's just kind of glossed over.
I feel like it was a big deal, but they were like, oh no, we can't let him be sad. So we have to like tell him almost immediately.
Yeah. But even during the time when he didn't, like when he woke up at Camp Half-Blood and stuff, and he's just like figuring everything out. Like, there was just like, there wasn't a chance that we were going to see a tear out of this kid's eyes, or there was nothing.
Oh,
it was just
no, absolutely
like,
not.
And I'm like, your mom just got disintegrated in front of you by a Minotaur. You have just, and like, even when he got attacked by what's her face? Megan Mullally. He gets attacked by her, and it's like, that is crazy. And I know he's grown up seeing things and whatever, but that was like, that is a crazy thing to happen and to go through. And he's like at home telling his mom about it. It was just very kind of like, yeah, this is all real.
I just feel like it's missing. I
want more oomph.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we should have been scared when he first gets attacked by her. And then we should be like really confused. And then we should be like, and when, you know, he's meeting the people in Hermes' cabin, like, I just needed that to feel more community and them to take care of him. And like, it just didn't, it's all falling flat, I think. Kind of.
Yeah. And while it's better told than the films were, it's also kind of a bummer because Logan Lerman was him in the films. And I actually think Logan Lerman's a decent actor. Like, he's decent enough. And as a kid, he was probably too old for the role. Like, this kid feels appropriate age-wise.
Mm-hmm.
But.
Well, and Annabelle.
I'm kind of like, oh, I wish Logan was better.
Annabelle.
Logan was better, so I wish he was here. You know?
Yeah. Annabelle in the books is very stern. But I do feel like they're not the actress, you know, or the writing or whatever is not giving her enough, like, humor and personality, you know, because she's fun in the books, even though she's not the nicest to him at first, right? Like, I think that, like, there's a way to do it where you can see why they become friends. And right now, she's like the worst parts of Hermione right now, you know?
Well, yeah, Annabeth to me is always like, she's tough, but almost like, because she's tough and she's got the bronze and stuff from Athena, she misses out on the people skills and the emotional bonding, and so it's fun to see her gain that. And this version, it doesn't feel like the payoff of when they get close will feel as like as powerful. Good. Because it feels kind of like she's just kind of moody, you know. But
yeah,
I liked the lady who played Medusa,
and yeah,
she was great. I looked at her, I was like, who
liked
is this?
The changes there, because like they changed it a little, and I was like, oh, it's cool. I liked it, you know.
Yeah, it was cool. I liked when she was like hunting them. I liked her voice. I thought it was good.
Mm-hmm. I do think things come a little bit more together in episode 4 is the note. I don't think it solves a lot of that stuff, but it's one of those things where I think the pacing of them coming together as a group is a little off. And it shouldn't take till episode 4, right? Like, these are our heroes. We're supposed to understand them from the get-go. And
us, I want them to be together. And I didn't.
Yeah. My biggest beef so far is the CG in this series.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
Like, oh my God, tough. The harpy or whatever Megan is. I was just like, why would you do this to her?
I know. I agree with you. It's tough. And I think, and all that being said, all the criticisms I have of it, like, I have no intention of falling behind on the show. Like, I watched first two got dropped and I watched them and I was like, okay. And then the third one came out and I was like, oh, and I watched it right away when I saw it was out.
That's how I know that I do enjoy it. I literally saw it in my up next and went, ooh, new Percy, you know, like that's how, right. I, you know, and so I was like, okay. And so I think these criticisms come from a place of loving the books. And I think that, like you said, that a lot of what I'm complaining about can be fixed in future episodes / you know, we can get a lot
they can
more.
They can find its footing in a way that feels great.
Yeah.
And if it continues and we get adaptations of all, what is it, 6 of them?
Because know. There's like 6 or 7 but, books. So
if we
20.
Get adaptations of all of it, it could be cool. Like, you know.
I'm looking at the like bibliography and, you know, there's a bunch of spinoffs and all this stuff. So we're not necessarily like Camp Half-Blood spinoff. So, you know, if this doesn't work out, doesn't mean the universe is over.
No, right.
This is in my notes. There was one thing that just like absolutely stood out to me, and it was so absurd. but I was like, there's a character called Boba Fett. Like, Boba I was like, is this supposed to be Boba Fett? Like, right. What is happening here? I don't know why, but I just wrote it right out. I do know why. But
I mean, Rick Riordan is a nerd. And so I think he does clearly. Sometimes. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I was like, is that her last name? Like, so, yeah. No, what's
the bully girl's name? She was a little.
Annoying. That's her. Boba Fett.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I agree. I wasn't expecting to. I liked it, you know, a fair amount. I will probably continue to watch it. And I liked the books, but I wasn't like absolutely love them. But I do love Greek mythology. So I'm still enjoying, you know.
It's just the best. It's so cool.
Yeah.
You should check out the Egyptian ones if you need.
Oh, don't worry. I just bought a whole library for them.
I was like, on the library site right now as we're thinking like, when you say that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry.
I was like, this I know. Yeah.
Yes. Fear not. The Red Pyramid is one of them.
Yeah, the Red Pyramid. I was like, the Red something. I was like, they're great.
All right.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Well, we're watching what? I'm sure we've all watched a considerable amount in addition to the things we've discussed, but we've all watched different things.
Yeah. I made it through my holiday Christmas season.
I was just going to say, we are post-Christmas. Yeah. Have you stopped watching them?
Oh, yeah, immediately. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you can tell his apartment looks so bare right now.
Oh, that's true.
There's no tree. There's everything. 26 the morning of, it's all gone.
Wow.
I made it through. I watched everything I had planned to watch. And when I say I was doing one a day, it wasn't only Hallmark movies, but it was like I watched the serious movies too that I like.
Sure.
And I finished off with The Family Stone and become my classic. Favorite. I love it. And, classic. And so that was great. I watched Wonka. Uh-huh. And it's a film.
It is a film.
I found
you and I have seen now.
I found Hugh Grant as an Oompa Loompa very troubling.
Deeply disturbing.
I mean, I've only seen the trailer and it's horrifying.
Deeply troubling.
And he's actually come out and been like, I only did this for a paycheck.
Which I respect. But
his performance was fine. It's just a matter of like Hugh Grant's like horribly de-aged and then like composited face on this like CGI body. And I just.
Creepy.
I just couldn't do it.
It will haunt my dreams, but
yes, it has.
His character is the best character in the film, and that's not a good thing necessarily,
it's just
a statement of fact. Like
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a rough time for me. I thought that the structure of it like lended itself to like, sure, be a cute little musical, that's fine. But I just thought like the songs were what? And
Timothy can't sing.
He can't sing. I thought that I don't like the Tim Burton one, right? The Johnny Depp one. I don't like that one either. I also say I know we're not doing a full review of this, but I'm not a huge Wonka person in general. Like I respect and like the original one, but I don't care about Willy Wonka. I just really don't.
Yeah.
But I felt like at least in the Tim Burton one, at least Johnny Depp came in and just decided he was going to just do something original on his own. And it was terrifying. But in a bad way. But at least it was different because no one's Gene Wilder. I felt like Timothy Chalamet came in and was just like trying to channel Gene Wilder, and it's not happening.
My biggest question, I said this in my review, is like, I don't understand how we got from this version of it, this Timothy Chalamet version of it, to the eventual character of Gene Wilder. And one of my great fears is that they're going to try and do like a middle film and bridge it. And I'm like, you can't do it because it's just not.
Please don't. Yeah. And it's just like called into like, bigger not question but just kind of brought it to my attention more how like kind of creepy and creepy drug pusher type of person Willy Wonka is. Like I just was like, this is just not, he's like using chocolates to get his way and just
drugging people. Itself honestly has never been my favorite. Like as a child, yeah, it was fun, whatever, but then as an adult I'm like, okay, so these four people just stayed in bed and he jumped out of bed immediately to go help his family when he got the opportunity to go to this factory. And then all of these children die in the factory and no one cares.
This like, is why I love Willy Wonka, though, or Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah. No, it is dark and twisted. But...
Yeah. Roald Dahl is messed up. Yeah.
I love a Roald Dahl book, okay? I'll tell you that much. I haven't loved a lot of the adaptations of Willy Wonka, and I have no desire to see Wonka, so.
No, your life is better for it. I will be very, I love the original film from like a filmmaking perspective and like so a it traumatized me perspective. And I love Gene Wilder. I love him so much. So this was so painful.
Yeah, this was.
Yeah, I understand.
Because I'm not offended because I don't have it attached. That you're offended.
Oh my God. I was just.
It's offensive.
Again, I'm going to sound like a broken record for my review, but like there's this moment in the original film where Gene Wilder like bites into a butter cup that's like a teacup. And you know that shit was like styrofoam and poison or whatever. And he sells this moment. And then they have an homage to it in Wonka. And I was just like, I don't want to eat that. And I love candy. And I was just like, no, ew. And you know it's probably actually candy.
Yeah, they tried it. Yeah, and it's just.
They tried
it. Yeah, it wasn't for me. But the one song all the other chocolatiers sang together were kind of funny. But that was funny. But I also, spoilers for you, Jackie, but like, I also found it really irritating that we were doing this fat suit joke. I was like, are we like. Mm-hmm. Not past that. Like, I am an avid lover of Friends, but I understand the criticisms of Fat Monica, as she's called. You know, like, it's like, I look at that, and it's like, so when I rewatch it, and then, you know, there are many problems in the show, but when I rewatch it, I'm always kind of like, this shouldn't be funny. This isn't funny. And the fact that we were just doing it here in 2023, it was very strange to me, because it was just like, at one point, Jackie, the officer's just getting bribed with candy so much that he's getting really fat the whole time. And then, like, by the end of it, he can't even, like, get out of the car. Because he's so big, and then he's like, oh yeah, the car shrunk or something. And they're like, oh, it must be that. Like, the whole it's just like, I was like, okay, this is really like we're going for that. And I mean, I don't know, it's just such a reach. I mean, it was such a low hanging fruit that I'm like,
Also, like, but, I really like Keegan-Michael Key, who plays the officer who gets larger during. But like, Keegan, come on, like he takes like every project. I'm like, Keegan, what are you trying to pay off here?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, no, I agree with you. I like him too, but yeah, it was woof, but. But then, yes, I also watched my Christmas lunch was the Color Purple, and I thought capital F fantastic. I loved it.
Ooh.
I've seen the stage show, and I thought this was a wonderful adaptation. I mean, I have some notes, but I thought, beautifully shot. I thought, like, the director, like, understands a stage musical. There were just elements of it that were so, it felt real world, but there were fantastical elements. I just thought it was fantastic.
I think it's one of the better like stage to screen adaptations I've seen. Like, did we need a new Color Purple? Debatable. But I respect that it's the musical.
Well, and I love that it stands on its own. Like, for me, I was like, I came out of it like, you know what? Like, I'm never going to be like, okay, I'm in the mood to watch Color Purple and having to decide between the two.
Yeah.
It's like they're their own thing. And this was so different because of that. Aspect that I was like, I will be in the mood for the musical Color Purple, or I will be in the mood for Whoopi Goldberg Color Purple.
Like, well, like, yeah,
and it's, but you know, where sometimes when it's a remake and it's like, but you're just repeating it. You know, I was like, this at least was like, so I was like, okay, cool, I'm happy it exists, and I loved it, and Fantasia killed it, and the actress, well, I'll see Danielle Brooks, I think she's a shoo-in, and then the actress who played Fantasia or young Celie, I thought was amazing. But anyway, totally worth the watch, I think. And then I watched Iron Claw this afternoon, and I have recovered, but I'm emotionally compromised. I'm not ready to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
Really good. Yeah. I love this time of year, because it's just like, we get all these just like, oh, right, get this in before awards season. Oh my God, everyone watch these movies. And often, if it's a good year, often there are just several that I come out just being like, yes, that was great. And then I watch another one, but that was great. So
yeah,
it's a good week.
It's a fun time.
Jackie?
I actually haven't gone to the movies much, but I caught up on Gilded Age, which was very good, and I was.
I did that as well. I finally caught up.
It, and I was like, "Oh, this was great,
delicious." Mm-hmm. I thought season two was better than season one, and I loved season one.
I loved season one too, but and eventually season two got me, because at first I was like, "Eh," and then I was
I'm gonna give a spoiler. I really liked season two, but what they did to Cynthia Nixon's character and like the convenience of the end, I was like.
That was a little like, okay, like I kind of would have liked to see the romance take a whole season, honestly, too. Like, not just like, it was so quick, you know, but
well, and then like, it was like, he should have died next season, or you know what I mean? Like, we should have had a little bit more, like, he was obviously too perfect, so something was gonna happen. Like, I kept waiting for the shoe to drop, because it was clearly like, this is too perfect, but I would have liked more suspense there, you know,
For her to have the opportunity to have like some level of independence before returning to her sister, you know,
so that she wants the independence. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that like there's a little bit more conflict next season between the two of them, because she's learned that she does like some level of independence, and she deserves some level of Independence.
Well, I think we got like I literally watched this like a day and a half ago. So I think we got a hint of that with her being like, you know, addressed or asked if she wants to
now she's
by the butler.
Lady.
I was like,
yeah, I mean, we did. And I was like,
yeah,
I'm excited. Yeah.
That's the thing is I agree with the criticisms, but then I like loved that tease enough to be like season three. Now she'll be the lady.
Which was announced.
I'm like,
love that. I was like, oh, you know,
in general, their story this season. And then, Larry Russell's story with the woman and, you know, and that I thought that was all kind of whatever, but I was so from the start, so invested in this opera war that I was just like, I was like salivating, just like counting down the hours until this would come out every week. From the episode.
No, I loved the opera wars and then the Duke at the last minute and like all of that. I loved all of that, but yeah, I didn't.
And then Mrs. Russell, like, clearly, like, basically just, like, giving Gladys to the Duke, and she has no idea that's happening.
And I was like, oh, my God.
I love it.
Do you two know how old that actress is who plays Gladys?
Taissa?
Yeah.
That's Vera Farmiga's sister, right?
Yeah.
I know she's, like, in her 30s, right?
She's 29.
Oh, okay. So,
wow.
And she's playing like a 14-year-old or whatever.
She
I'm like, ugh.
So young, though. You know, I know it's weird, but
she looks so young.
Yeah.
She really does.
I was on a binge. The guy who plays Larry Russell, that's the, no.
The
Who's
son.
The son? No, of Christine Baranski.
Oh, Agnes's son. What is his name?
Van Ryan.
I know you're talking about. Yeah, but what is his, not Will.
Oscar Van Ryan. Oscar Van Ryan, the actor, is 45. And the guy who plays George Russell is 42 or 43.
Wow.
I was like, oh my God, what?
Because I love Morgan Spector, and that's Russell, but George, what's his face?
Rebecca Hall.
Rebecca Hall's husband, yeah. And I just love them. I think they're so gorgeous and fun and nice. But anyway, yeah, that's crazy because they did not look the same age.
I know. I was like, oh, I don't know who it, I don't know if it's like a compliment or an insult to one of them, but anyway.
Well, because George, I was going to say, because like Morgan Spector doesn't like, he doesn't look old to me.
No, not at all.
He looks adult. Like he's grown up, right? So like when we talk about, you know, like 40s, it's like, hello, like right around the corner here for all of us. And it's like a thing where he looks older than us, but he doesn't look bad. You know what I mean? It's just, he just seems older. But,
yeah, I know, but I can't imagine like being cast as, you know, knowing that one of your castmates is playing, you know,
exactly.
But, you know, good on all of them. They're still working. Yeah. So
I wonder how old he's supposed to be in the show. Cause I was like, you know, the Russells are considerably younger than Agnes. Right. So it's I wonder if he's supposed to be like in his like late 30s or something.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know if we know.
Probably.
He looks good.
I don't think the men got married a lot later. So it's like all the women were expected to be married by 20 or whatever. Yeah. But all the men.
You need to marry them off.
Yeah.
Because
they're still malleable. But the men, probably in their 40s usually.
Yeah, I'd say so.
And then I almost wanted to start. I haven't ever looked into it, but I wanted to look into like historical things that are being pulled in. Because obviously the Metropolitan and all that. And it's interesting because I'm reading right now a book that takes place in the Gilded Age. And I haven't met the character yet, if we're going to, but there was mention of a Mr. Astor. And I was like, is that like are the Astors?
No, they're real families.
Oh, the Astors are a real family.
Yeah,
there's Astor Place. Yeah.
I guess that makes sense. So I was like, I haven't looked into like the historical parts of the time, like to be like,
the opera wars were real, but it would be interesting to look into more of it and like understand.
Yeah. And I was like, it was cool. Fascinating. I don't know. I'm loving it. I salivate for that show. But yeah. And I also finished the Home at the End of the World.
I binged that the last 2 days.
Yeah. I liked it, but it gave me devs where like the start of it I thought was really interesting. And then by the time we're getting to the conclusion of the end, I was just kind of like, this just kind of went somewhere that I didn't need it to go. Well,
ended up feeling to me like a Bobo, like Glass Onion.
Yeah, it's also a movie.
Like a more self-serious Glass Onion.
And I, you know me, I love Zal and Britt. Like, I'm like, as creators. And so I just like look forward to anything they do. And I know it's a little bit of a miss for me, but not bad.
Yeah.
You know, could have been better.
I watched a bevy of films back to back to back and each of them almost more painful than the next, I watched Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, immediately followed by Anyone But You, which is that rom-com, in quotes, immediately followed by Rebel Moon Part 1 and Child of Fire, which we talked about.
Oh my God.
And then Migration, which wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, but it wasn't great. It was fine. And then, let's see what else.
Cute.
I watched Gilded Age. I watched A Murder at the End of the World. I watched Pokemon Concierge today. Just a new Netflix series. It was like 4 episodes that were 15 minutes each. It was really cute, actually. Yeah.
Adorable.
Oh, Singles Inferno. Still watching that. Still spectacular.
Oh, I haven't watched that. I could use another.
It's so good.
I think I'm on the last season of Dallas right now for Housewives.
Oh, wow.
It's like 2020 and they have like a Asian, I don't know. It just feels weird.
No, it was, there's a reason that show is not on anymore. Or that like version of the franchise. Yeah. Which is still a lot. But
yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm sure I watched 1,000 other things too that I just like can't remember. Oh. And they probably weren't.
I have been watching What If, or like a few of the What If episodes.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay.
I haven't yet.
I hate the style so much, but.
Me too. And I haven't yet. I'm very sad because I read that there's a 1602 episode.
Oh, really?
Is that true?
A what?
It's Marvel 1602.
Marvel 1602, which is like.
Oh.
So that's one of my favorite graphic novels of all time. And I've actually like, I've dragged my feet on it forever, but I'm like halfway through a script for it that I had written over the years to be a show. And I was like, oh God, they adapted it. I don't even want to know.
Well, it isn't out yet. Well, it isn't out at the time of this recording because they've been doing this interesting like daily release thing.
Oh, interesting.
The two episodes that I have enjoyed slash seen were there. Well, there's one I really enjoyed only because it's basically Die Hard.
Oh.
It's What If Happy Hogan Saved Christmas. And there's like one very obscure joke in it that I thought was the funniest thing ever.
Mm.
That was just meant for me. But yeah, no, I you know, I still, the animation style drives me up the wall. And just like,
I'll probably watch it all in one sitting, honestly, when it's all out.
I think that's
that much.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I watched the first season. I think I was the only one of the three of us that kept up with it at the time.
You were.
and I got through it and it was fine. Nothing changed my life, but nothing like ruined it either. I was like, whatever. But I agree with you. I don't like the style. I think it has a lot of pretty stills. You know, like they'll do a pose.
Yeah.
Like, I can remember even, you know, the Captain Britain one, it was like, oh, it's so pretty. But it was just like, every time they're moving, I'm like, no, stop. But when it's a still, I'm like, okay, you can just screenshot that. It's beautiful.
Well, tiny sport. One of them is like a Blade Runner inspired episode. So it looks like Blade Runner, which is cool. But then they start moving and I'm like, no.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, just.
Yeah.
But then really what's funny is when I say that and I talk about, oh, the beautiful stills and all these things, whatever. It's like this is basically, you're just showing us why we should just read this as a comic book.
Yeah.
You know, but instead you're trying to make this animated show look like it has comic book style art and it feels weird, but then the best part of it are just the freeze frames, which are just the comic book. So it's just like,
yeah, well, I think they're
a weird
what
circle.
They're really trying to get people on is like the voice acting.
Yeah.
Which hit and miss.
Yeah, and sometimes it's been okay, and sometimes it's been not okay. And
yeah.
And life goes on.
It does. All right. Well, thank you both.
Yes, thank you.
Bye. Thank you, as per usual, to Jackie and Matt, and that is actually it for this episode. If you liked it, we would love it if you could leave us a 5-star rating, a review, or even consider subscribing.